and we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Trans Positive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise. They call
it climbing and I call it visibility. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KABU throughout February every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for Black History Future Month, our special programming series in celebration of Black heritage. This series aims to celebrate all aspects of the Black lived experience, from contemporary, political, and social issues to understanding how history impacts our present. Again, that's Black History Future Month, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. throughout the month of February, where you will hear interviews from Black creatives, artists, activists, revolutionaries, KABU hosts, musicians, and more, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Hey KABU listeners, KABU cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign, thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
KABU. Yeah, come on.
Once again, y'all.
Yeah, come on. Gotta see it international. I mean, you take an interest in world affairs, baby. Ha.
Yeah,
go. Uh-oh. Oh, yeah, on their ass. This is the world party.
Yeah.
Now, take it back for him.
That sound like a setup.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Decided they put their land back undivided. How would the world be at? Where would you be at? Whose side are you inclined to back? Forget the fact that there's a major difference. The Palestinians pre-existed. European occupation, first British who later passed on to European Yiddish. Victims of the Holocaust displaced. Who were next when they wanted to go? This place called Palestine came to mind. Historical text that they provided a line that they were entitled for their survivor to return to Canaan. And upon arrival, proceeded to settle the land, but it needed cleansing. So Palestinians were weeded. The claims of the Europeans superseded the rights of indigenous people seated in the land where they lived and coexisted. Existed where other tribesmen similar and different.
This story
is so often twisted to fit whichever faction dismisses. Honor, justice, rights, justice. You in trouble when they bust they muskets.
Israel must tear down the 425-mile wall that
stretches through much of the West Bank. This, according to the International Court of Justice.
Freedom journalist Amy Goodman reporting.
We're joined now by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. Welcome to Democracy Now! Dr. Barghouti, can you describe the wall for people who are not familiar with it?
This is a wall that extends for about 752 kilometers, about three times as long and twice as high as Berlin Wall used to be, destroying and damaging agricultural areas, uprooting hundreds of thousands of olive trees as has already happened.
Dr. Barghouti, finally, it is not only George Bush who has supported Israel's right to construct the wall through the West Bank, but in a new policy paper, Senator John Kerry has said the security fence is a legitimate act of self-defense erected in response to the wave of terror attacks against Israeli citizens. He says the security fence is not a matter for the International Court of Justice. Your response?
Well, the International Court of Justice is a court that takes decision about international law, and nobody can take that legitimacy from it. But let me say that 900 Israelis have already died, and about 3,200 Palestinians as well. More than 4,000 victims during the last 3.5 years. All these people should not have died. They were all the victims of the policy of occupation.
Welcome to the People's Dinner Party. Here at the People's Dinner Party, we got a very, very, very special guest, straight out of Portland, Oregon, a living legend, a former Black Panther, Mr. Kent Ford. This is who we got for you guys today. It's going to be a great show. Peace out to all the volunteers that's helping out in Palestine. We're going to be talking about Palestine as well as the Black Panther Party. I want to thank a special guest, technical guest, Jinka, a good friend of mine for over some, like, it's been like 30-something years. And also an amazing artist and engineer himself, Chris, is also helping us out produce the show today. So my name is Samsir Ali Shakur. I'm coming to you straight out of the projects of Cleveland, Ohio, and one of the most underserved projects in Ohio. And we're bringing you some really good information that you can feed not only your soul, your spirit, your mental, and hopefully helps your physical. I also like to acknowledge struggle that's going on in Gaza, the embarrassment that's going on in Gaza, the gentrification that's going on there. We want to tell the people of Gaza, you know, the Palestinians, our brothers and our Muslim and Christian brothers and sisters there, that we are here with you. And we see what's going on. And we stand against it. Not only do we want a ceasefire, but we want you to have your own state and a right for self-determination. It's been too long, way too long. So all power to the people, all power to those who are struggling in Sudan, Niger, Burkina Faso, East Congo, way to take a stand. And we all stand with you here on the People's Dinner Party. Today we got a living legend out of Portland, Oregon, former Black Panther activist, who's an inspiration not only to me, but should be an inspiration to us all. In his 80s, he's still unapologetic. And with that, Mr. Kent Ford, thank you so very much, sir, for joining the People's Dinner Party today. And I'd like to start from the beginning, your history with activism there in Portland.
First of all, thank you for having me. And the question that you asked about the history of activism in Portland, it just kind of came by kind of natural, you know. In the process of the 60s, and just out of the growth of the civil rights movement, SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Dr. King, and the other civil rights icons. I ran into the guys down in Oakland, you know, and I want to clear that up, you know, former Black Panther. Once a Panther, always a Panther, you know.
All right now.
Huey is the one that brought me into the party in 1970. And actually, he approached me in Oakland the weekend he got out of prison for that fry business, you know. Anyway, all that's history now, you know. And it's moved fast forward, you know. Huey made a visit to Gaza, you know, in 1971, 81, or 82. And he actually shook hands with Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and the rest is history. And the party had a 10-point platform and program, and about land, bread, housing, food, and we fed over 30,000 kids nationwide, and one of the biggest and baddest things that we've done. And we had two clinics here. We're the only chapter in the country to have a free dental clinic. Our health clinic was called the Fred Hampton People's Free Health Clinic. We had about 30 doctors, we opened 5 nights a week, 7 and 10 o'clock in the evening. The dental clinic was open 2 nights a week. And all you had to do was just come in and put your name on a piece of paper. You got a chance to see a doctor, a dentist, you know. And no calls to the patient, no calls to the people that visit the dental clinic. The dental clinic was named the Malcolm X Dental Clinic. And the rest is history, you know. We sustained and maintained these clinics for over 10 years. We went through the usual COINTELPRO harassment and intimidation and everything. And, you know, the COINTELPRO break-ins and all that COINTELPRO stuff, you know. COINTELPRO was started, I think, you know, in 1958. It was originally started for the Red Scare, you know, and then it switched over, you know, to start harassing the civil rights movement. And of course, the guys in the 60s, we never knew about all that stuff until years later, you know. And the good neoliberals, they wanted to try to pick your friends. So you can't associate with these people, you can't associate with these people, you know, and on the straight and narrow. And you had Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam. You know, Johnson had 548,000 troops over in Vietnam, and he still couldn't bring the Vietnamese people to their knees, you know. It was truly like a program, you know, the people's dinner, you know. It was a people's war, a people's struggle. Anyway, with all that said, you know, the party was totally against the war of imperialism and the war in Gaza and Palestine, and stand behind the Palestinian people in their struggle for statehood. And my hat's off to anybody that's demonstrated and out in the streets, you know, and marching and protesting in favor of the Palestinian people. Sleepy Joe, he was on Air Force, he was on the White House in the sky. He was headed over to Tel Aviv. And he must have heard about 6 weeks ago when he first bombed the first hospital. You think he turned around and come back? No. He went over and he gave the butcher of Gaza, he gave him a bear hook. And I'm not in the name calling business and none of that, you know, but that's what it is. It's a total genocide. I'm just glad I'm well enough, you know, to take a part, to have a part in it.
From what Jenka was telling me, you've been a part of the protest since the very beginning, you know, and not just standing around talking, but carrying banners for like miles, you know, inspiring people around you in this hard time that we're facing, you know, on this planet. And I'd like to thank you for that, for being such a great inspiration to us all.
I'd like to thank her for just saying that. You know, it's nothing. You can only get out and hold a banner and march, you know. It's nothing, you know, and it's all part of the struggle.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Panther Party in Portland, the history of the area in which you lived in, and how it got gentrified? And Jinka, we had a little sidebar conversation a little earlier this morning, and she was speaking on, I think, there was like a Katrina situation where like thousands of black people had died in this flood.
Good question and good research on that, you know. And this Vanport, you know, is during the big war, World War II, you know, and it had a Vanport, and it was a community set up by the government, you know, and everybody there pretty much worked in the shipyards and everything. And, you know, for Portland, you know, it's a port. And so what happened, they had a Memorial Day flood, you know, and after that, the rest is history. And everybody was displaced and they moved in, you know, all throughout the Albany area. And the city administration, you know, a lot of the guys moved out here from the southern part of the United States, and a lot of people from the Midwest. And this was the Pacific Northwest, you know.
Right.
What happened after the flood, and a lot of people ended up in the Albany area, and Albany in Spanish means white. And so that's been totally gentrified now. It started about 35 years ago. And as a group that has the, they have a claim in federal court now to contest the move that they made. It was all done by the Portland Development Commission. Well, the head of the Portland Development Commission, he was a guy out of West Point. And I don't need to say no more about that, you know. It was not white supremacists, and it's called Prosperous Portland now. And so they put a claim in against, you know, the hospital that totally gentrified the land. It was a core area. It had over 100 businesses down there. You had over a couple of hundred homes down there. And they would buy your property, devalue it, and then tear it down. And it's been over 50 years now, and nothing has been put back there.
Wow.
So it was a core area, and that's where we had the health clinic, and that's where we had the dental clinic, and also a legal clinic. And one of the comrades at the party, he was saying, we started out, you know, with a half a dozen guys. We peaked at about 70 guys. And if we got in the 80s, we had pretty much weeded down or purged down to about a half a dozen hardcore to support us. In the Black Panther Party here in Portland, and we had the same police harassment, same three-letter guys harassment, and and it would take me all day to go into a lot of details. And like, again, I want to lose to the break-ins, the harassments, and we took up actions with the peace movement, the Vietnam peace movement. And the rest is history, you know. We sold the party papers every week, and we had good communication with the guys. See, Seattle was the first chapter outside of Oakland, just in the bookstore yesterday, and Aaron Dixon, he has a book out called My People Are Rising. It's a pretty popular book.
Right on.
But anyway, but I want to go to again, go to Palestine. You notice the shift. You know, the lady from MSNBC. Even Michelle Alexander. You know, whose husband is a federal judge, but Michelle Alexander's sister. You know, she's a professor down at the University of Oregon here. That's about 90 miles from Portland.
Wow.
Her husband was he wrote one of the icon book on the party, you know, and he took him 8 years to write the book, I think both of those guys now are at Arizona State University. But again, I want to thank everybody for coming out for any kind of support for Palestine. There's no time for us to fence rather than sit on the fence. It's time to keep it in the streets, you know. And after George Floyd, you know, Portland, Oregon, we led the nation and the world in the protest. We sustained it for over 100 nights. And we built on this and built on this. All the way up to the Memorial Day 2020. And these were the biggest protests in American history. I like to go there, you know, lacking 200 from being 8,000. And Portland, Oregon, led the way. So we out here in Portland, you know, we don't have to take a backseat to anybody. You know, we had the Proud Boys here, QAnon, you know, the Oath Keepers and all that, you know, the same guys that went into the Capitol back there where you at, you know.
Right.
On 1-6 a couple of years ago. I want to say it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Again, everything go around, come around. You know, and I want to emphasize, you know, about Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, you know, where they still holding guys there. You know, they call it the 150-year prison, the forever prison. And wow. I had lunch with a lawyer the other day, you know, and I talked to a lady with the Human Rights Watch. She visited Guantanamo Bay 31 times, and then she said, "Mr. Ford, it's just too depressing. I just can't go back there anymore." And she sat right here in the living room and interviewed me, you know. And she sent me one of her books she put out on Guantanamo Bay. But they're still holding guys there, you know. But anyway, it's something. The Western world, young man, it's got against the Arabic world, you know. And it's right there in Fanon's book, The Wretched of Dirt, you know, dirty old Arabs, dirty old niggers, you know, they kill you on the native street corner, you know.
Right, and, right.
I was just out talking to people, you know, and talking about the mass murders, you know. Nixon was mass murders, and Kissinger was mass murders in Vietnam, you know, and I don't like to go there, you know, and Biden, he's a mass murderer, you know. And Sleepy Joe wouldn't know whether he was in Tel Aviv or D.C. You got people quitting from the State Department, you know, over the U.S. policies, you know. But mine, you know, it's going to come back and bite him real good. And then you have what they call the lady at the U.N., a black lady, you know. They go along with everything they do. It's a sexual imperialism, I think is what they call it, you know.
Right.
And if you read, I try to keep up on things, you know, and I realize, you know, I'm slowing down a little bit, you know, and sometimes I don't think I am, but I
don't look like you are to me. You don't look like you're slowing down at all. You know, me being a little younger than you, you know, I get frustrated, you know. I guess there's other people out here that get frustrated too, because it seems like the more aware you are about European imperialism and how it's so barbaric, and it doesn't, I call it the beast, how it doesn't care who it eats or what it eats, You know, it has no loyalty. You know, for those black people who think that I'm just on Palestine, nah, I connect with the folks in the East Congo, those children in those mines, in those cobalt mines, who are being murdered and beaten and raped. You know, the men, women, and children who are going through that. The reason why we're able to have this telephone conversation, because, you know, a six-year-old, you know, is digging through mud, you know, in a T-shirt, you know, hopefully to earn just enough money to get a little bite to eat, you know. And I'm down with Burkina Faso pushing back in Niger, you know, pushing back, you know. I'm a little afraid for Niger because I don't want them to jump out the frying pan into the fryer, because, you know, they pushing France and U.S. away, but hell, they making friends with Russia. But I guess when you're under that type of oppression, it's easy for me to make an observation from the outside in. You know, when you're under that type of pressure and trying to get free, sometimes, you know, you make strange bedfellows trying to get free. But I just don't want them, because to me, Putin and Biden is the same. You know, I had a friend of mine, Cooper Andrews, who joined an anarchist rebel group in the Ukraine, and to fight back against, you know, the Wagner group and Putin. This is not the world I want to live in. This is not the world I want. I already knew that European imperialism was a monster, but, you know, for them to drag the Palestinians out in the middle of the world and execute them in front of all of us, it's heartbreaking. You know, how am I supposed to go back and act normal and participate in your voting and you know, and all the structures here, when I know that my government is using my tax money to drop 2,000-pound bombs on babies and starve people, cut off their water and their electricity, have seen these babies in these incubators dying. 85,000 pregnant women was in jeopardy of poor health care because of this oppression.
And we have a senator here in Portland, Oregon, you know, he actually came out against the war in Palestine, you know. I was just, to add to what you were saying, you know, I was just reading in Al Jazeera, you know, about over 230 American cargo planes landed in Israel.
Right.
You know, well, you know what that's about, you know.
Full of weapons.
So it's a jumping off place, you know. And how do you get over 20,000 people dead in less than 90 days? How do you get 2 million people displaced? If you can explain that to me, I'm willing to listen.
And it's not even, I don't know why we even call it a war, because, hell, a war requires two to tango. It's just they're just slaughtering folks, you know. And
they know it, you know. And I never thought after Vietnam, you know, I thought maybe, you know, kind of learned the West tried, kind of learned the lesson, you know. You had the French there first. They fought the French, then they fought us, you know. And when they first saw bombing those people, you know, I think, who was it, Kennedy, and he was going to pull out of Vietnam, you know. And you know the historical thing about the chickens come home to roost and all that business, you know.
Right.
And see, I didn't come into the VPP via the civil rights movement,
right.
Our group of the civil rights movement. I came in via the Vietnam War, I was opposed to the Vietnam War. I had a friend, out of Chicago, and he moved out to Portland, Oregon here. He and his brother had a they had a service station, you know, and we got to talking, and they were Puerto Ricans out of Chicago. And boy, he had been in the Navy, and boy, was he ever rat on, you know. And so he died in a coal miner's accident, you know. And he and I went to hear Wayne Morris that night speak at the Memorial Coliseum. And he had 4,000 people there that night, you know, talking against the Vietnam War. And he actually heard Malcolm X speak in Harlem, you know.
Right.
And we'd come over and we'd talk, just like you and I are talking now, you know. But anyway, we got started organizing and so was recruiting a lot of Vietnam vets coming back from Vietnam. And boy, they didn't like that too much. I even got a knock on my door from the three letter guys one day around Veterans Day, you know.
Right.
And I was about 24 years old. I was supposed to be in Vietnam. I was supposed to be out on the street corners talking about, I guess, the war in Vietnam, you know, and talking to the brothers and sisters on the corner about the injustice of the Vietnam War. If you didn't have a quarter to buy a Panther paper, I would just give you one. I said, take this paper and read about it here, you know. And I was always saying in one of the papers, you know, if the enemy, as Vietnamese saying, if the enemy refuses to get out, you know, annihilate them. And that was one of the sayings in one of the Panther papers. Boy, well, it's confiscated over 500 of those papers to keep us from distributing those in the neighborhood. And so finally, the captain of the police department, he called us one day and he said, you guys can come get your papers now, you know. And we got them, and by that time we had a couple of issues out, you know. And we got those papers, and we looked at those papers and said, well, what's in this paper? You know, we hadn't even seen the paper. And that's when there was right there, you know, about the Vietnam War, about fascism, racism, and capitalism. And I don't want to get into all that right now, you know. We got want to get a ceasefire going. Right. Want to get the Palestinians a state, you know. Want to get health care for everybody, you know, and treatment and mental health for everybody. And the main thing is want to get the food in, you know, the caravans in with the food and everybody can get water and food and health care
and power
and the power back on.
Yeah.
And my hat's off to Amy Goodman, you know, she's been doing an excellent job, you know, reporting from the Palestinian territory, you know.
Amy give it to you raw. And a little closer to home, Miss J Funk over there, you know, Miss Jenka, she give it to you raw too. Jenka don't let you get away with nothing either. You know.
Yeah.
And shout out to the comrade. Yeah. Solid. She's been solid for years. Solid for years. One of the things, brother, that I was thinking about is you were talking about, you know, the protests in Vietnam. One of the things that was really unique about that time in comparison to today's time is that the fact that almost every, if not every, military base had an underground newspaper speaking out against the war in Vietnam.
I ran into a guy, I'm glad you brought that up. I ran into a guy, you know, with a plane, he said take off, the jets used to take off from the aircraft carriers, you know.
Right.
When they were bombing North Vietnam, you know. They dropped more bombs in North Vietnam than they did in World War I, World War II, the Korean War, including the wars that dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and Gaza, it's past that with the tonnage of Hiroshima now, and Palestine, but anyway, let's stay focused and keep things out here in these streets. It's the
right
only
on.
Thing they understand. It's the only thing they understand.
Right.
We tried everything.
Right.
The sit-ins, the mass arrests, going to jail, and well, they used to all that, but they're constant, nationwide and worldwide, we keep this pressure on them. Something's got to give. Encouraging anybody, but I'm just saying what I think has been working, and I have my friends, I just like to look and pull back, and if you don't ask me nothing, I don't say nothing, and if you ask me something, I'll just give you, I don't like to give advice, I like to figure out what's best.
I stick
to the party 10-point platform and program, and wars against imperialism,
it's still relevant.
Yes, exactly. And I never knew it. The jerker here sent me a picture of a website, and that was Malcolm in Gaza,
Right.
And I never knew that.
Right.
But I know it now, there's another picture of Muhammad Ali in Gaza, in Palestine.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful picture. I'm going to send it to
you. Wow.
And when I do my walking tours, I'll show everybody that picture. But let me tell you want to know who had Muhammad Ali's eye at the time?
Who's that?
Malcolm, the man we call X.
That's right.
Yeah, like I said, everything going right. That was the first place Nelson Mandela went to when he got out of jail after doing almost 30 years in prison.
I think he was educating me on that a while back. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you probably seen that picture, Malcolm, and Desmond Tutu, the good Anglican Church guy in South Africa. He visited Palestine.
Right on. God bless
them,
Mr. Tutu.
Yeah, you hit it on the head, I want to say this. You remember after they beat Tyree Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee, beat him to death?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you know the police chief there, head of the Scorpio unit? She had went to Israel to do all this training with those guys. I'm pretty sure. And not only that police department, but hundreds of police departments throughout America, they do the same thing.
Throughout the United States. New York is one of the biggest ones. That they go over there and they train. When I used to be on the block back in my younger 20s, when I used to be out on the block, regrettably, I was a corner boy. I got a lot of regret. We used to see the police would drive around with their lights on. And Chief Ramsey at the time said this is one of the tactics that they had learned from the Israeli police department, because they went the D.C. police also went over there to train. And I didn't have a problem with the police keeping their lights on, because this means I can see you from the distance. So keep up the good work, You're easier to spot when you got the lights on, Yeah.
Sure.
We went
through all that drug epidemic, crack cocaine epidemic. I pretty much wiped out a whole generation, And back in the 80s and when it hit home in the 90s and that preschool to prison pipeline that Michelle Adesanya talks about, you know.
Yeah.
She's actually married to
the new Jim Crow, I think.
Yeah, the new Jim Crow, you know. Yeah, and you know she, and it's a spellbinding book, you know. So I got right. a chance to meet him. I got a chance to meet him right here in Portland, you know.
Okay.
And talk to her, and she actually told me how she came about to begin to write that book, you know. And,
right.
But anyway, I want to go back to Palestine, you know. And I think if we just do what we know, and we don't have to read nothing into it, you know, and claim no easy victories or nothing like that. Just do what we know, and you know, just keep things out there in the streets, you know, and morning, noon, and night. And just like we done back in Portland, Oregon, after the post George Floyd on Memorial Day in 2020. Now, you know that knee on the neck that Chauvin used on George Floyd? That's a staple in Palestine.
One of my friends sent me a picture of a painting of George Floyd. I believe it was in Bethlehem, on a wall in Bethlehem.
Sure. And yeah. then even when they dusted Michael Ferguson in St. Louis, when they dusted right. him, you know, and he the first ones out there to support the black community was the Palestinian people.
Right.
And I have friends here in Portland who actually have uncles and aunties, Palestinian friends back in St. Louis. And right. They're one and the same. The town that I grew up in Richmond, California, the whole city council came out for a ceasefire in Palestine.
Amazing. That's amazing. Uh-huh. That's amazing.
I knew it was something about that town, but let me tell you, when Huey went into the state capitol back in 66.
Yes, sir.
Three of the guys that went with Bobby Seals and those guys was out of my hometown right there in Richmond, California. I looked at the picture. And I
Get out!
I went to school with all those guys.
Get out!
Yeah, and you know, and I said, okay, you know, I actually see a sea change out there, you know, with the young generation, you know,
right?
And they ain't putting up with all that bullshit no more, and they're keeping up with a lot of what's going on in the world, you know. We stick to what's been working for us, and what's got the other people successful in the world, and how do other people defend themselves? And we always tried to lead. The party always tried to lead by example, you know. And
right on.
Basically, in the beginning, Huey even wrote in one of his books, the black community wasn't a reading community back then, but I was a reading community, you know. And you see, just as many blacks in the bookstores now as you see in at a concert, you know. And years ago, you didn't have all the literature that you have out now. And I remember going in the bookstore back in 1966, right across from the main Portland Multnomah County Library. And the guy who was in charge of the bookstore, he says, anything with black on it sells like hotcakes. And there was only a few books out there, and that was something called Michael's book, Malcolm's X book, the autobiography of Malcolm X, and Alex Haley's book, who did the autobiography. Root, you know,
yeah.
But check this out. Hardly could barely get the book published. Nine is in his six or eight editor in over 40 languages, you know. And who would have thought that all these years later?
Right on.
And if you want to go to how we got from where we were back then, and you want to go to where we are now, you read Malcolm, you read Baldwin. And to me, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm gonna be square. Everybody else is bullshit, you know. And the party, the man we call X, he set the example. And they thought that I don't want to second guess nobody, but it doesn't Malcolm X, you know. You know, oh, what we we got them now, you know. It wasn't even the beginning, because he had already laid the foundation, you know. Now, Ali tried, you know, but Ali got scared. And they turned him in the 80s. You get a chance, get that book, The Toxic Relationship Between Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X. Ali got scared. You wouldn't believe this, but in the 80s, he voted for Reagan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had started doing all those, Ford commercials, and
he was doing a cleaver. He was doing
exactly. But you know, I got to tell you this: you never turn against your master. You never turn against the person that brought you that got you over. You know, you never turn against them.
Yeah. No.
You never go to the other side. Just like that's my point. And that's why even today, you know, I don't want to go down the program, you know. I don't do those other guys, you know, who showed up at the mosque that Sunday in New Jersey, you know. But all the hit guys come out to dust and knock. I don't do them, you know.
Right. Elder. I was watching a documentary on who killed Malcolm X a couple of years back, and I thought it was awfully funny. Not funny, you know what I'm saying? Just a word that I'm using. It was awfully funny that the same person that allegedly, and I think he did, one of the hitmen out of New Jersey, that hit Malcolm, shot at college, and he's a good friend of Louis Farrakhan.
Oh yeah, well, he showed up.
It gets deep.
That's funny, you know. But you know, don't get. He's got to live with that, just like, you know, the Western world's got to live, the good liberal democratic Western world's got to live with what's happening in Gaza, you know, in Palestine, and with the genocide in this day and world, you know, and he's got to live with that, and you know what, he's up in age now. I don't know how old he is, but I imagine
he's about 90.
Older than I am.
Okay. Yeah, that ain't got too bad. Yeah, he's about 90.
He looks good, but he'll never live that down.
The other thing too, comrade, is the thing that he kind of disappointed me in as well, was when I had went to New Orleans for the Katrina recovery. I had gotten wind from a very good source that Farrakhan had told the members of the Nation of Islam to stand down, to don't participate, to leave it alone.
Oh, he's good. He should have done better than that, man. He's good at that.
Yeah. You know, and that broke my heart. You know,
They're working hand in glove with the three letter guys. You know, they did the same
Come
thing.
On now. Come on huh? now. Come on well, now, yes sir.
And they yes sir. With him, you know, you don't.
Yes
need the,
sir.
If you got any kind of street savvy, you know that, you know.
Yeah.
I remember at the Denver Clinic one night they sent a Muslim guy down there. You know, he's passed away now, and he wanted. Say something about Malcolm X's name being on the dental clinic, you know.
Right.
And before I knew it, I'm rich in my pocket and wrapped him across his, you know. And he took off, and I ain't seen him to this day, you know. That's how you nip shit in the bud, you know. But I never knew until here recently, in the last 10 years or so, that whole family was great working with the three-letter guys. They paid them all off.
Yeah.
And they used to have the guys here in Portland. They'd go out and do a demonstration. And I never knew this several years later. And then what they do, they go downtown and get the envelope with the cash in it.
Right.
And
yeah.
But wait a minute now. And they would tell them, we don't care what you guys do, talking to young black guys, but just don't become Black Panthers.
Wow.
And one of the guys who was hung out with him, he approached me one day and started telling me this stuff. And so me and some of my comrades says, okay. Well, I have to tell you the rest when I see you, you know?
Right.
And, you know, but we want to stay focused on Palestine and the troubles of prison. That's what we want to stay focused on.
I absolutely positively agree with that. And also, you know, the struggles that's going on for liberation and self-determination that's going on all over the planet, you know, against this European fascism. You know, some people tell me, you know, that, you know, we don't live in a fascist state. And I don't mind being wrong about my opinion. But to me, we already in a fascist state. It don't have to come. It's already here. And I liken it to, you know, like what Malcolm said, you know, like sitting in a dentist chair. You know, they pain you up. You don't feel nothing, but they ripping teeth out your mouth and blood pouring all down your cheek.
I'm glad you went there. Civil rights was a miserable failure. And we still fight the same thing that was fighting back in the 50s. Voter suppression, gerrymandering, registering the vote. And there are spellbound stories about the Birmingham bus boycott and all that. Still fighting the same thing. And I remember all that stuff as 50 years ago, you know. And I said, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I had just come from the state of Louisiana. I'm out in California now, you know. I'm a young man, 13 years old. And I said, oh boy, I'm out in California now. I've got to eat a chance out here, you know. Then years later, I started listening to Otis Redding, you know, that record Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. You know the record, don't you?
I'm black.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I said, oh boy.
And the Chains, was it Otis Redding saying the Chains gonna come, or was that someone? That was Sam Cooke, right?
That was the Impressions. Sam Cooke, yeah. Yeah, okay. Real winner, you know. And, they actually performed at a birthday rally for Huey Newton one night, you know, back in the 68 birthday celebration. You know, we were all young and idealistic, you know, but we tried to hook up with other struggles throughout the world, you know, all the way from Venezuela, you know, to China. And I visited China for a month in 1975, you know. And you know, and the guys in Africa, you know, Pete O'Neill and Mark and his wife, you know, Sister Charlotte. But I wanted to say this: this ain't the dirty old Russians, or the Chinese, or the Cubans, or the Venezuelan people that's doing this in Gaza. It's the Israelis, you know. Where's the women? Where's the feminist movement in the Western world with all the babies being killed? You got over 9,000 babies being
speak
killed.
Speak on it.
You know, and then again, you know, the loud mouths from the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, we're all there. Yeah, but that's all right. Everything go around, come around. You know.
So, you know, it seemed like a lot of our leaders, as long as they were talking about separation of race and separation of class, they will allow these arenas to flourish. But the minute they started talking about unifying poor whites and poor blacks and Hispanics, you know, that's when you start catching hell. But I want to dedicate this show to the 7,000 the 7,000 children that had to go through this bull, you know, that none lost their life, you know, because of a bunch of grown assholes who don't see them as human beings, who didn't allow them to reach their full potential. You know, I want to dedicate this show to them babies in Gaza. And also I want to put out, you know, to the young people, my young so-called African-American people, you know, I want to apologize for not being able to do more. Because, you know, this world is really unfair in which we hand it to you. And I know y'all doing the very best you can to navigate through all the bombardment of social media and disrespect and all this type of thing. And, you know, y'all looking for a way. And I just want to tell you, don't give up. Don't give up. No matter what people may be telling you, you know, that you're not worth nothing. You are worth everything. You know, you're special, you're beautiful, and I wish that I could have done more, you know, to hand you a better world, but this is what it is, and you have to stand up, find a way to stand up and stay alive, and by all means, stay the hell out of their penitentiary. You know, the project that I live in is a reflection, among other projects in the United States and the world. I see it as a breeding farm, you know, for the prison industrial complex, for cheap labor, you know, for Wall Street, you know. But it's up to you guys now, you know, to find me. People like Mr. Kent Ford, you know, and Aaron Dixon, you know, done laid groundwork. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just have to adjust our focus. And with that said, comrade, I want to thank you for allowing us. But here at the People's Dinner Party, we like to thank Mr. Kent Ford, our special guest, even though you didn't hear or see her. You know, Ms. Jinka, you know, my comrade for over 30-something years, seemed like. And also Chris, my producer, who without him, I couldn't do too much of anything. Chris is not getting paid to do any of this stuff. He's a hip-hop artist as well. Some of y'all may know him by his handle, Time, you know. And I want to thank him, too. And we will win. Just hang in there. We will win. Don't be discouraged. We will win. And with that, all power to the people. Mr. Kent Ford, is there some last words that you would like to say? We close out the show, sir.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. All power to the people. Thank y'all for coming out and listening to the People's Dinner Party. Much love to you, and we out of here. Thank you so very much.
Palestine's been occupied for decades, but a home for centuries. This land is generations of my family's memories. To plant, grow, and nurture the symbol of peace. The olive trees guaranteed that our people could eat. Living with limitations, pushed down by the occupation. Wanna see the pain? Take a look at the people's faces. Imagine being kicked out of the only house you ever known. We're praying for our souls while they're praying on our homes. It's not easy to put this into words. Looking at my baby sister, is this something she deserves? Growing up in a world where she's not treated the same. Denied the right to live free because of where she came. They wanna occupy this land. Won't let them occupy my mind. I stay occupied aside as I write about my life. Because my only
This is Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my email. It is often mentioned as one of the most progressive and daring stations that we have in this country. They are not afraid to tell you the truth. So tune in to KBOO Portland and get the real word.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals such as possums and rabbits, including